Hi, welcome to the HSP Connection. This is a mini series of the Meeting of Minds podcast with me, Philippa Robinson.
And me, Robbie Lee.
In this series, we are looking at all things HSP, from our personal experiences of discovering that we are HSPs, working out what we need to thrive as HSPs, and working in our businesses as HSP coaches. This series has something for everyone, because really what is good for HSPs, you know, is good for everyone. If you want to know more about what it means to be an HSP, I suggest you go back and listen to the first episode in this mini series, which is episode 90 of the Meeting of Minds podcast, where we explain much more about sensory processing s was what was expected. It might be completely the opposite, that because they didn't or didn't have the opportunity and they've given the children all the opportunities, then the children are expected to get the grades. I mean, it can come from so many different angles and be quite subtle in a way.
Yes.
But it and also it becomes very invasive. And it's in you from quite a young age. And that's what you're talking about, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, you've said that brilliantly, of course. But yeah, if you think about the messages that we're getting as kids, for me, it was around grades. There was also messages around weight, you know, the thinness. Thinness was a thing. And the messages that boys can get about being tough, or that the things that we're praised for, and to your point, often it's innocuous, like adults are trying to be helpful, they're trying to, right? But the things we're praised for, we then can interpret as, oh, that's what makes me good, that's what I need to be, right? That's what's expected,
right? yeah. And actually, as a parent, I don't want any parents listening to this to think, oh God, what have I done to my kids? Because I think about that all the time. But just being aware of it, I mean, we talk about awareness all the time, don't we? But, you know, just being aware. And if you get a whiff that maybe your child is doing something that something seems to be driving your child to want to do really well that might not be coming from within themselves. So my oldest, my 16-year-old, is absolutely, he's driven. He really wants to do really well. He's doing his exams this year. And I don't feel I'm putting him under any pressure. Maybe I should be putting him under a bit more pressure. I don't know. It's that fine balance. I don't know.
Right.
But he wants to do really well, and he's actually really quite competitive, and he doesn't get that from me, and he doesn't get that from his dad. I mean, we're a bit competitive, but we're not really super competitive. So, and he has a real driven competitive streak in him. So that is him, you know. But I keep saying to him, you know, make sure you're happy with the choices that you're making, and are you making them for you when you're not following your friends? Or he's now talking about doing further up school, the next level, what I did, you know, doing maths and further maths and all this. And I'm saying, you know, just make sure you're doing it because you want to do it. Please don't be doing it because I did it, because it's a lot of maths. Half of every single day at school will be maths. So, you know, and so I don't want parents listening to feel like, oh God, you know, what am I doing? Just, you know, relax. It's fine, because actually, if you're worried about what you're doing, the chances are that you're on it.
Exactly. You're doing a decent job. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So don't worry about it. And it's not to throw parents under the bus either. And I don't want people sort of thinking they've got to go and give their parents a what for, because this is all about awareness, isn't it? And how we can help people see things in themselves that maybe they might want to change, but it's their responsibility.
100%.
Yeah. Sorry, I've gone off on a bit of a tangent, haven't I? Sorry.
No, so glad you did, because no, this is not about parent bashing. In fact, I mean, my parents did what they did out of love and out of trying to give me the best.
Yes.
And it's not just parents that we get these messages from,
no,
right?
Of course it's not.
It's the world that we swim in and all of those systems. So we're getting these messages all over the place. And awareness, to your point, that's what we're trying to offer, for people to have an awareness of what's driving them on the inside, so that if it's not feeling good, they have some choices.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to share a Dr. Brené Brown quote. I love her work on
me too.
On this topic. And in The Gifts of Imperfection, she said this: perfectionism is not the same thing as striving to be your best. Perfectionism is the belief that if we live perfect, look perfect, and act perfect, we can minimize or avoid the pain of blame, judgment, and shame. It's a shield. It's a 20-ton shield that we lug around thinking it will protect us, when in fact, it's the thing that's really preventing us from flight. And I just love that quote.
You read that to me before we started, and even now again, it's making me feel really quite emotional. It's the embodiment of like the weight of the world on your shoulders, isn't it?
Yes, it's the weight of the world on your shoulders while trying to project that everything's fine. I've got it all under control. It's good. I'm good. I'm perfect. I'm back here. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's so, I find it to be so isolating, because it's the constant, for me, it was a constant mask wearing and projecting of like, no, I got it all under control. It's fine here. My house always looks perfectly clean, and I always look perfect, and I always do the perfect things, and I always get the perfect grades, and my work is always like, it's exhausting, and it's not true. So it was constantly just like, I hope no one finds out. Perfectionism looked like two different things for me. It was, I hope no one finds out what I'm really like. If they see under the surface and see this mess, they won't love me. They won't love me. And it also, as it carried on into adulthood, trying to view every task as needing to be perfect, and my whole beingness as needing to be perfect, whatever the F that looked like, right? It was exhausting. And so what happened is then I stopped doing as many things, as running out of energy. It's like, well, if everything has to be perfect, I don't have that energy for that. Yeah. How about you?
And that must make your world become quite small.
So small.
Yeah, I'm so just getting small. This image of like you inside this box, and the box is getting smaller and smaller because, you know, you don't want to, you're shattered. You're absolutely exhausted by trying all so hard time. All the time. So in order to not try so hard, you sort of retreat. And so you don't do things, you don't try new things. So just all those opportunities to try new, exciting things that you might actually turn out to be, well, it doesn't matter whether you're good at, but you might turn out to be really good at, or you might turn out to really love and enjoy, even if you're really rubbish at it, you really love it.
That's right.
And who's to decide who says you're good or rubbish anyway? I mean, you know, if you enjoy and you miss all those opportunities to do to do all those things, and all that can come to us in our adulthood as a, you know, a step by step progression of the things that we've learned in childhood.
That's right.
And a lot of it is subconscious. A lot of it we're not even aware is going on.
Not at all.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, yeah. You asked me how did it come to me? So so you know, as is well documented on this podcast now, I grew up with an alcoholic mother, and as I got into my teens, her drinking got worse. I had three younger brothers. I was the only girl. So I became sort of like a second mother, and I'd come home from school and I'd instantly be expected to take over the care of certainly the two younger ones. And it became very much, I didn't have to be a it was very much people pleasing in the big sort of way of looking at it, in that if I could come home and do things and hopefully to please my mother, then maybe we'd have a calmer evening. So it was a constant striving to do things that so she didn't have to do them, or to do things to please her, to try and make her happy. But ultimately, she was so miserable. I was never going to make her happy anyway. And I just made myself miserable in the, you know, as a result of doing that. It definitely found its way into school. School was my safe place. At school, you know, the teachers were largely quite nice to me. I was lucky. I was quite academic, so I could do school. I didn't find it that hard. So it was at least a place I could go to and feel like I was doing okay. And I did, you know, I did really well in my exams. I didn't get straight A's, but I got quite a few A's and a few B's. You know, I did really well. And I didn't, which is really interesting because I did get praise for it, because at home my mum was totally not interested in education because she wasn't academic. So she was like, oh, you know, it became something that became a barrier between us in a way. I think now looking back, she could see me moving away from her. Mm-hmm. But as a result of me moving away from her, I think in her mind and her losing control over me, I lost any bond there was with her. So what then happened is, certainly when I started work, I looked for praise there. I worked so hard, such long hours. I also tried to party really hard as well to fit in with friends. So, you know, my 20s were, there were some great fun times, but on the whole, it was exhausting because I was trying to fit in at work, trying to fit in with my friends by being as perfect as I could be in those situations. Because largely underneath it all, I felt pretty worthless. Mm. So, I mean, that is perfectionism in some way, but it looks mine definitely came from the trauma. Mine was definitely a need for love, a need for connection, a need for people to be nice to me. Yeah. And then when I got married and had kids, it was like, okay, so I had to be still the best at my job, you know, good at my job and keep a good home and, you know, take my kids to like singing classes and this, that, and the other, and, you know, make sure the home's clean and we're eating good food. I mean, gosh, my first one got pureed everything. The second one got jars all the way, because by the time I had the second one, I was a bit more relaxed. You know, it was this facade on the front that was like, yeah, everything's great.
Yeah.
When it wasn't.
Yeah. When it wasn't. Mm. Yeah. Oh, so relatable, Philippa.
Yeah. And, yes. And now, you know, as when we came on, I was like, oh God, I look a bit wrecked today and my hair's a bit of a mess. And we were going, well, this is perfect, isn't it? For the perfectionism, you know, recording. Because it's like, yeah, I'm here, I'm doing it.
Who
there is to tell me that I'm not, it's not okay for me to come and record a video and an audio podcast with you looking like I do today. And nobody, there isn't somebody out there. That's the whole thing with perfectionism. Mm-hmm. That there isn't an arbitrary sort of standard that you can compare yourself to. There is nobody out there who can tell you whether what you think is perfect is right or wrong. There is nobody judging you anywhere near as much as you're judging yourself.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. And like, who defines perfect? That's something that I started asking myself. It's like, well, wait, what is this perfect standard? Where did this come from? What is this perfect thing that I'm trying to achieve? Where does that come from? Yeah. You know, and
did that help you? Oh my gosh,
it did help me, because it helped me just start to recognize this thing that I'm chasing is just a totally made up thing, right? Like, no matter what I could point at and say, well, a perfect this looks like this, some person or collection of people decided what that looked like and maybe put that out into the world, and I consumed it and went, oh, okay. Like when you were describing as a wife and a mother, like all these things you're supposed to do, like we get those messages. Here's what it means to be, well, who decided that? People, right? So I was like, okay. So it's all just made up. Like we all just made it up. I remember reading about, I mean, obviously in Western society, all my growing up, beauty standards were very narrow. I think they're starting to expand now, and I'd love to see that, but beauty standards were very narrow. And I remember seeing a documentary about a tribe, and it's on the continent of Africa. Forgive me, I can't remember where it was now. It's been forever since I saw it. But in this tribe of people, their beauty standard for wives, when women got engaged, they would literally take her and fatten her up. It was like they would feed her like all the best thing and fatten her up. And I'm not saying that that is the way to go either, but it just, I was just like, that was their beauty standard. And I was like, oh, okay, we're just all making this shit up, right? It's like what the messages I was getting around beauty were completely opposite from the messages these women were getting about beauty. Like, oh, we're just making it all up. Okay. Well, there's freedom in realizing we're just making it up.
There absolutely is freedom in that. You're right. And I think if you think about it in a sort of really logical way, because there is no arbitrary standard, you know, there is no, and there is nobody who can come and, like, I don't know, look at my bookcase and tell me whether my books are on there in a perfect way or not. You know, I mean, that's a silly example. I am on a hiding to nothing by wanting the perfect bookcase because I will never achieve it.
Right.
Because there is
no
achieving perfection.
Yes.
So I am literally setting myself on a course of unhappiness and all the, I wish I could think of a better word right now, but I'm setting myself on a course of total dissatisfaction because I'm chasing something that doesn't even exist.
Yes. I'm so glad you brought that up. It's this, and the internal dialogue of you're reaching for this thing, which doesn't exist. And because you don't hit it, then it's the feeling of failing.
Yes. Constantly. Right?
And so then it's this internal constant, like, judgment and like, ugh, and I failed again and I'm not meeting the standard, and all of the energy drain that comes with that constantly berating yourself and thinking of how you're not doing it enough and you're failing. It's exhausting.
It absolutely is. And
there's no winning that game. You can't win.
No.
You can't win it.
No. So really, by understanding that, being aware of it and noticing mm-hmm. that's what we are doing, hopefully we can start putting some new thoughts in place, some new practices where we can practice being imperfect.
Yes.
And realize that actually it's okay. Nobody thinks any less of us. The world doesn't stop turning, you know.
Yep.
It is absolutely fine. I had to, and I would really, you know, implore anybody listening who might recognize any of what we're saying to try putting some of those changes in place now. Don't wait, like, you know, I had to wait to lose a lot of the sight in my right eye to actually begin to realize any of how I was operating. And I was 47. That is a lot of wasted years, you know. And I don't sort of harp on about it because actually better to have realized then to have never realized.
That's right.
So you're never too old to realize things, never too old to make changes. And I mean, it can feel, I don't know, it's just really interesting because it can feel harder maybe after so many years to make those changes, but I didn't find it harder. I think I found with age came the not giving quite so much of a F about it all. And actually maybe by then I found it easier to put changes in place, maybe because it came at a good time in my life. And I'm a great believer in it. You know, these things come to us when we're ready to hear it and we're ready to do something 100% about it.
100%. Yeah. Mm. You know, I think one of the gifts of middle age is, especially like if we're talking about perfectionism, well, I tried to be perfect. Like, I did all the perfect things and then bad stuff can still happen in life and I could still not achieve the perfect life. And, you know, so it's like all the things that perfectionism promised didn't happen. So then it was like, Oh, okay. Well, I'm expending all that energy and not getting this wonderful magical payoff. So maybe I could try something different.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny when you said then that's the thing about middle age. I'm like, oh, you know, because I never used to understand. I remember when I was a lot younger, my auntie, who is in her mid 70s now, but she'd say, oh, you know, I still feel like I'm 20 or something. And I'd be like, what? Like when I was 20, right. I didn't understand that. And now yeah. I'm 54, as I was last week. I kind of like, yes, I'm 54. Yes, that's middle-aged. You know, yes. You know, I suppose when I was 20, I thought I'd be retiring now. But actually, I don't feel that different. So actually, it's really, right. we realize that it's who we are. We feel yeah. the way we feel because of who we are, not because of an age, not because right. of, I mean, to a little extent, partly what has happened to us growing up, because what happened, this spirit that is in me, that this sort of this spirit in me that is now helping me and wanting me to speak and do these things, and you know, it's my spirit and your spirit that have kind of connected and brought us together. You know, that part of me was frozen for a long time because it wasn't yeah. safe. That's how I talk safe. About it.
Yeah.
yeah. But now it is safe, and now we're having a ball. And to leave those people pleasing and perfectionist tendencies behind, you know, it's a work in progress.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
just like shedding this big weight, you know.
Yes.
What did Brené Brown call it? A 10-ton shield.
Yeah.
And the freedom in it is just incredible. You know, if anybody was coming around, I'd always have to make sure my house was really tidy and clean. And I mean, I'm naturally tidy, as is my husband, so it's not a major sort of job. But now I'm like, yeah, come on in. You know, I don't know. Oh, yeah. You know, if I haven't hoovered for a couple of days, it doesn't matter. Just come on in.
That's right.
Vacuumed, you'd probably. I don't know. Would you
yeah,
say
yeah, vacuum? We say vacuum, but yes. I understand Hoover, yeah. yes.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Hoover's a trade name anyway, so uh-huh. I should be saying vacuumed, but yeah. And I know that's a silly, but you know, that sort of thing would have really bothered me.
Yes, it's not silly, because those are the things that drain the energy, yeah. right? And can keep yeah. us distant, because it's like, oh no, my house isn't good enough to allow people to yes. be here with me. And that is something I relate yeah. to that one. Yeah.
And while those people are there with you, you're busy worrying about what they're saying, yeah. what they're noticing, and what you haven't managed to do, rather than being there with them and having a great chat, a laugh, exactly. and whatever it is. Yes. So, which takes us back to the point you made about it being quite isolating.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. When you said freedom, you know, like when you, putting away perfectionism, people pleasing. The freedom in that, it's palpable. And again, to all the listeners, neither one of us are saying we're perfect at not being perfect. It's a journey,
yes.
right? I call myself a recovering perfectionist, a recovering people pleaser.
Yeah.
It is a journey, and it is all about what Philip is talking about, awareness, right? So as we get more aware, and as we put more practices in place, and we give ourselves a break, you know, it can create more of that space and freedom and connection with people. I have found that dropping that perfectionist mask is what has allowed me to have really deep, wonderful, beautiful connections with people. Because how can you connect to someone who's like perfect? And I'm saying that in with bunny ears for those of you listening. Like, because we all know deep down we're not perfect. So when you see someone else's perfect facade, it's like, how do I connect with that? I'll never measure up.
Yeah. Right? I completely agree with you. I remember when I first went to therapy. So that's like 2017. I remember going out for a walk with a really good friend of mine and telling her the things that I'd been learning in therapy. And she just stopped and said to me, oh God, she said, because she knows quite a bit of my story, and she knew at that time quite a bit of my backstory. And she said, you know, I knew that there must be more to it couldn't be as easy for you as you were making it appear. And I was worried that you weren't talking about it, but I didn't know how, I didn't know how to get in, because you there was never any room to talk about those things. And now to hear that you're talking about it and owning it and, you know, telling me how hard it is at times just makes, she said, you know, it just makes me so happy to hear that you are now able to tell me those things. And that was, it's making me feel quite emotional just telling you about it. Yes. That was a real moment of understanding that perfectionism keeps people away.
Yeah.
It perfectionism becomes a barrier between you and other people.
Yes, it absolutely does.
Yeah. And like you, I have had so many wonderful people come into my life in the last 6 years, and that is no coincidence. That is absolutely a direct result of me being more open and less trying to seek perfection and be more vulnerable and owning what's going on for me a bit more.
Yeah,
a lot more.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, beautifully said. Yeah, perfectionism, actually, let me say it this way. Like, when we give ourselves permission to not be perfect, we're actually giving that same permission to the people around us, right? So awesome. Which is so freeing. Again, I'll go back to that word. You know, I grew up in a household, both my parents have perfectionist tendencies, you know, that they got from their growing up. You know, it's like, yeah. it's a pattern in our family.
Yeah.
And you know, that can, seeing perfection around you constantly, it's, for me, it just felt like I was a constantly measuring up. It's just like, oh, got to be this in order to be loved, which is not ever what my parents said. And honestly, not how they behaved either. But that's what I internalized.
Yep.
Right. It's so isolating. But letting those walls down and showing people I'm this real human under here. Well, then we get to connect to other real humans. It's we're all that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so I shared helpful. With you before we started recording, actually, something that somebody sent to me just like a couple of hours ago. And, you know, nature always seems to have the answers, doesn't it? And it was about, I'm going to get this a little bit wrong because I always do, but it was about, you know, go out into the, and there you go, perfectionism.
You're going to do it imperfectly.
Mess it up, so it's going to be fine. But, you know, if you go out into the forest or into a wood, you know, and there's trees everywhere, and some trees will be straight, some trees will be bent over, some trees will have branches missing. None of them are actually perfect.
And whatever that means.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So they're all different. There's different shapes and sizes. I love it when you see trees that are obviously in the prevailing wind and they're all growing sideways because they're constantly in the wind. You know, they were probably in different circumstances, they'd be growing straight up, but they're not. Yep. But we accept that. We see that things have happened to them that have, you know, maybe one hasn't had enough light, so it's bent to find the light. One's been blown over by the wind. They're all shapes and sizes and for all different reasons. And we just look at that and we just accept it.
Yes.
Because that's the way it is. But when we come to human beings, we then have these ridiculous standards. We judge ourselves and we judge other people. Yeah. And it's less okay to not be within these parameters of whatever these non-existent airy fairy sort of standards are.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And it just becomes self-perpetuating.
It really does. Yeah.
So accepting, and this is what I'm always talking about, accepting who we are. So accepting for ourselves who we are and loving ourselves for who we are allows us to then do that with others. I accept myself, I can accept others how they are, because I'm not judging myself and I'm not going to judge them for how they are. And then that becomes a self-perpetuating thing, hopefully, and less judgment, you know, more kindness, more love, and all those things that we've talked about. But it kind of has to come, as the answer always is, it has to come from inside.
Always.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very tied to self-love.
Of course it is.
Self-acceptance, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So any, you know, perfectionists out there, people pleasers, you know, we see you.
Mm.
We really do. And it is exhausting. And, you know, hopefully we might have given you some ideas. I'm wondering, what can we say as in a way to get started, I suppose? Well, I'm coming back to what I always say, awareness. Well, you've listened to us now. So we've mm-hmm. raised your awareness about something and you're mm-hmm. noticing what you're doing. What little changes can you make? And I think we've already said that a little bit. Try and be imperfect.
Yeah, I have a great example of someplace that I started.
Yeah, please.
Was with my laundry. You know, I had everything folded perfectly, looked beautifully. When you walk into my closet, it's lovely.
Mm. Is it all color-coded?
Color-coded. Oh. Yeah. I mean, for the 30 seconds a day I spent in my closet, it was absolute joy. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, it brought me joy to look at it. The downside of it was that I didn't enjoy the process of folding the laundry and getting everything to look perfect. And it was such an energy. So then I'd be like, oh, I gotta do laundry. And it just felt like such this monumental task. Mm-hmm. Then I would put it off and then it would be a bigger task. And then I would put it off and then it felt overwhelming. So it was, and then it was constantly like, I'm failing at laundry, which sounds funny to say, but it felt really real, you know, yes, like failing at laundry.
And you have to do laundry. You do have to do it.
It's something that needs to happen. And I, one day I just remember going, you know, there's no laundry police. There's no one that's going to come check my drawers to make sure that my undergarments are perfectly folded. And then I was like, do they even need to be folded? I'm like, they do not. And I just gave myself permission to not fold stuff. I don't fold my underoos. I don't fold my bras. I don't fold my undershirts. I don't fold socks. I bought all socks that are the same and throw them in a drawer. And it's like, it. What that did for me is, first of all, released me from the laundry has to look a certain way in order for me to be doing it right, in order to get the credit for it, right?
Yeah.
And it turned it just into, hey, this is something that needs to get done. It doesn't have to be done perfectly.
Yeah.
And it made the task more accessible. You know, it's not like, I don't want people to think that what we're trying to say is you shouldn't strive for things and you should, that's not at all it, but it is about what, like being really selective about what you care so much about, right?
Yes.
Like, because to care so much about the perfection of everything for me was just, it didn't work for me. Like, so I wasn't able to do it. To think about like, where do I want to spend my energy? Like you were talking in the last podcast about our resource management system, right?
Yes.
Like we have limited energy resource. And so where do I want to spend it?
Yeah.
You know,
well, it's a bit like a boundary you put in place for yourself.
That's
because
right.
I'm not going to I'm not going to fold things up like I did before. Yeah,
I'm not folding laundry. I'll hang laundry and I'll just throw it in a drawer, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah, I stopped ironing 4 years ago.
Oh gosh, I haven't seen an iron in half a decade.
Yeah, exactly. Life's too short to iron, as far as I'm concerned. Now,
agreed.
And you know, like you say, there's no laundry police, there's no vacuuming police, there's no but also, as you say, this is not about not being able to have a healthy striving for something. And that's the difference. Is it healthy striving to want more, better, to improve at something, whatever it is? Is there a healthy intention behind that, or is there an unhealthy intention, which is about feeling a lack of worth and trying to improve that lack of worth by doing things that other people are then going to validate you for?
That's exactly right. Yeah. And it often shows up in things like laundry and dishes. You know,
oh, dishwasher, the dishwasher. Yeah. That's
another thing. Yeah, so
if you want some, if you want to try things. So I know Robbie's got a story. The other thing I was thinking about is I know a lot of people get really stressed about the way the dishwasher is loaded.
Yep.
Like,
you know, the perfect way to load.
And everyone has their perfect way to load their dishwasher. I don't go anywhere near the dishwasher because, frankly, my husband I can't stand the way he does it. So I just let him do it and I have nothing to do with it. And that's fine. He's happy. I'm happy. That's fine. But also, you've got another thing about the dishwasher, haven't you?
I do. I was raised in a house where we washed every dish and then put it in the dishwasher. And I grew up well into my 40s, I think. I'm just like, well into my 40s, thinking that that's what needed to happen. And I remember one day thinking, what if I didn't wash the dishes first? Like, what if? And I tried it. I just put the dishes in. 90-something% of the dishes came out wonderfully perfect. The other small percentage I just ran through again. And I thought, the time spent for me was enormous. The energy spent. And again, like the mental drain of thinking, oh, I gotta deal with the dishes. Mm-hmm. Well, now it's just like, great, throw the dishes in there.
Yeah.
Like the concept that I kept hearing so much growing up is if something's worth doing, it's worth doing well. And it's like, well, some things are just, you just do them. Do them shitty and just get them done. You know?
Do them shitty.
Load your dishwasher. Just load it and just do it. Like spend your energy on the things that bring you joy.
Joy. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And there is no dishwasher police. There is no laundry police. You know, nobody's going to come around and tell you that you've done it wrong. And it is about, you know, that mental load of that thinking, constantly thinking about how do I do this and I've got to do this. And I say quite a lot, if something's worth doing, it's worth doing well. But in my mind, the way I take that, so it's all about interpretation. So it's all about communicating. What do we mean about these things? So there's nothing wrong really with saying most things. It's just what meaning is being taken from it. And
that's right.
I would say that for me, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing well, is about healthy striving. But I totally understand. I totally understand how it's come to mean something different for you. I get that. So it is about being more clear with each other in the language we're using. What does it mean?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
I'm going to be more clear using that again. When I use that with my kids, I'm going to be clear what I mean about it. Because I hadn't really appreciated the other take that you can have on that. So thank you.
No worries. You know, one of the other things I did want to mention before we go too is that perfectionism kept me from creating and putting things into the world. And I think lots of my clients, I hear that too. Like it stops us from putting something out there because it's not perfect yet. And man, if I waited till I was some brand of perfect in my mind, I wouldn't be here on this podcast. And this brings me so much joy. And we're hearing from people that it's helping them. And I think about all the things that I could have done that I didn't, like I would get to a point and then it's just like it becomes this constant iteration of the smallest thing to make it just this much more perfect, but the energy spend on it just kept accumulating. And then the mind spins out and it's just like, never mind. Like it's not good enough. It's not good enough. I'm not good enough. It becomes that script.
Yeah.
And I love talking about perfectionism because I want people to put themselves into the world, put their creations into the world. Now, you know, I say I'm recovering perfectionist because the stuff still comes up for me. But now when it comes up, I know it's because I'm stretching. And so I can look at it differently. And I'll be like, ah, I'm growing. That's great. Like, here comes the voices, because that means I did a growth thing.
Yeah.
And it's all in how it's a shift in perspective, right? It's looking at things differently and say, instead of now being stopped by, I'm not good enough, I'm not perfect enough. I want people to know that you do not, perfection is not the price of admission for your life. Perfectionism is not the price of admission to do things that you want to do. I want people to know you can be imperfect and make an impact. And so please, imperfectly, go out there and make your impacts. We need you.
We do. You're absolutely.
We need you.
You're so, and that's such an important thing to say, because you are right. And I think creativity is what feeds our soul, and a lot of us will absolutely avoid that if we don't think that we're good at it. And I, you know, if you look at anybody who will tell you about podcasts, so there's plenty of people out there who will tell you how to put a podcast together, how to release a podcast, and a lot of them will say edit out the ums and the ahs. And I purposely have not edited out any of them in any of my episodes, partly because I want to be imperfect, because yes. Otherwise I would absolutely get obsessed with the ums and the ahs. I'm trying to get better naturally at not doing it. Still very much a work in progress. It's all about trying to think silently in your head and not go, as you think about it. But,
yes.
You know, if I had taken that to heart, I would either have had to find an editor. I mean, I have got an editor, to be fair, and he would take them all out if I asked him to. But I don't want them taken out, because I think it's the natural way the conversation flows. But it was also an exercise for me in not being perfect and just getting it out in the world.
Yes.
It really
yes.
was.
Now it's all you can hear, right?
It is. Oh, all I can hear is that I say and ah and actually all the time. So if anybody else has noticed those, I do know I'm doing it, and I'm trying not to.
But okay. Welcome to being human. Right.
Exactly. I am just human, you're right, as are you, as are
yes.
as are we all.
Yes.
You know, so hopefully we can inspire people to perhaps be a little bit less perfect, more imperfect as a result of this.
That's right.
Thank you. I've loved this conversation. I knew we would. This is really what you love talking about, and it's been amazing. So thank you.
And thank you.
Thank you for listening, everybody. And we'll be back next time with another episode. And until then, take care.
Thank you for listening to the Meeting of Minds podcast. You can find this podcast in all the usual places. Please tell your friends. Please subscribe. And if you have a moment, I'd be really grateful if you could rate and review, as it helps other people find us and helps me spread the messages of empowerment and positivity that I'm really passionate about. If you want to find out more about me, you can visit my website, www.safeandsupported.co.uk. Until next time, bye.